easily, but I would like it on tape of what she remembers of our family in Canada. Dora, you told me about a one little story when I was just a small child, and would you tell that one about the fire?
Yes, you were just a little tiny child that time for me. And they had never been, we had never in our life ever seen a moving picture. And there was going to be a moving picture that night, and the name of it was Foxy Grandpa. And everybody was so thrilled, and your mother and father and Grandpa, my father and mother, and myself. And you were just a tiny girl. And Bevan and Selma were bigger, and they were there too, but you were a little tiny. So we all went to the theater, everybody. And we were so tickled, we all wanted to sit together. It would be a big event. But there wasn't room for us all to sit together. So your mother and father and you sat down a couple of rows ahead of us. And the show was about Foxy Grandpa, and I remember definitely, it was silent, but it was moving. And I remember that Foxy Grandpa was in the hammock, sitting in a hammock, and he's kids come out and dumped it over, and he fell out, and everybody was laughing, and it was a big, great, wonderful thing. And all of a sudden, somebody yelled fire, and that place went into a panic. It turned out later that there wasn't a serious fire, that our film had caught on fire up in the projection room, but it caused a panic. And living across the street from your parents was an old couple of Mr. and Mrs. Cole, an old odd, real odd couple lived across the canal from us. Your mother and father lived across the canal from us. And then the Coles lived across the street from them. And as we were rushing around, in all this excitement, Fern, you, had decided you wanted to go back and sit with Grandma. So you left your mother and started back toward us and got lost in all of this that went on. We didn't know where you were. They didn't know where you were. And there you were, a little lost child of that age. And the Coles, this old man Cole, came, grabbed a hold of me and shoved me through a window. First he shoved his wife through the window, and then he shoved me through. See, at that time, how old would Selma be at that time? Well, she'd be about 8, and I'm 5 years older. So I was about 13 years old. So he shoved me through this window. And I had a brand new pair of oxblood kid gloves that I was so proud of. And it tore, as the window tore it. Fern, you feel it right there. I still got the scar where it cut. And in bleeding, it bled, and I had rubbed around, and I had blood all over me. So when my mother found me, she thought I was half dead, of course. She was scared to death. And I wandered around. Everybody was hunting for Fern. Sammy's all out. And they was all hunting for her, and Alice was frantic. She was just in hysterics. And there was a woman come rushing up, come past me. She says, "Whose child is this? Whose child is this?" And I said, "It's mine." And I grabbed Fern out of her arms and ran to Alice with her. And I found her. And everybody was so scared and happy over it.
And Dora, I'd like you to tell the story of Grandpa meeting up with the Indians. It's a very famous story, and she'll tell it to you.
This happened when we were living on the ranch in Canada, and we were about, I'd say probably 5 miles from the Kootenai River. We always had to ford it when we went to our nearest town, which is Mountain View, where we went to do our grocery shopping and things. But probably 5 miles to the river, and it was about 10 miles on to this town where we always did our shopping. So then it was called Mountain View. And I hated to go there because at that time I was just petrified at the sight of even a cemetery. If I see a cemetery, I was just scared half to death. And you had to go right past the cemetery to go into town. For some reason I didn't like to go to town. But my father was headed there to get some groceries at this time. As he got over the river, he found a group of strange Indians. It was the Cree, mostly, that were up there, but he found these strange groups. They were not the same, you could tell. And they were camped there. so he stopped and was very friendly and with everyone. Because he was used to being around the Indians a lot anyway. And he asked them where they were from. I don't exactly remember the details of where they were from. But one young man could talk very good English. And he said that they had traveled quite some distance because their chief had died. And that he was very much loved by all of them. And it was their custom in those days to leave the bodies for a few days before burial. And they carried out the usual custom. And then the chief, when they was about to get to the point of burying him, preparing him for burial, he came back to life again. And he said to them, I want you to go with to the Kootenai country, and there you will find some people who have the book giving the history of our people, and you'll find that book there. And then he, in a little while after he died, and then he was buried. So this group was there on their way to find the people who had this book. And my father said, I know right what you want and right where to go. And he took this young man and went on into Mountain View and found the bishop and the members of the ward in there. May have been a branch at that time. And they found the Book of Mormon and explained to him what it was, the story of their people. And the story has been told and been published in the church, and nobody's ever read it. And at one time, since I moved to Branding, I was out on the mountain with Albert Lyman, who's well known in the church as an author. He was the first settler in Branding. And he called us, he would go out there and start seeing me and his wife. And here the Indians would come from every direction, and they all loved each other much. And he told that story there, and I was at the meeting. And when they got through, I had some speakers to work, and I told them that my father had been the one who had talked to the Indians about it.
And I'd like you to record that story of Aunt Sadie and Mother being so very ill and being healed by the priesthood.
Well, at that time we were living on the ranch, and Thelma and Bevan were little kids, small little kids, and when your mother, when Sadie went down to help your mother at that time, Bevan was real small. I think maybe she'd gone down to help when he was born, really, because he was real small. And while they were there, they were drinking well water there in Raymond, and it got contaminated, evidently, and Sadie got sick. And so Will, your dad, said, I better take her home. So he brought her home, and your mother stayed in Raymond. And she was also sick, we found out later, the same way as Sadie was. And Sadie got this terrible, terrible fever, and was so sick, and we were, as I said, 15 miles from the book branch, and we didn't go to church. Seldom went to church because we had to ford the river to go, and conditions were so we weren't able to go very much. I don't remember going in the 4 years we were there, hardly at all. But my father always had his church at home. We always had family prayer, and we always read the scriptures to us, and on Sunday we observed the Sabbath day. But when Sadie was terribly sick, she got worse and worse, and she imagined all kinds of things, terrible things, and she'd scream. She even imagined that her eyes were laying on a chair by the bed, and she screamed about that. And this one night she was so bad that my father stayed right there in Arizona. They had to go 35 miles, which is nothing now, but the team and the wagon took all day. He had to go that far if he got a doctor. So he always used his priestess for everything. So he just knelt this one night and kept his hand on her head all night long. He never kept his hand off her head. If he did, he'd scream. And we were all so afraid that she would even live through the night. And we all prayed his family prayer, and he gave his blessings to her and everything. And the next morning, just as it was coming light, here came a man driving him on a horseback. And he said, Brother Boone, what do you need? And he was the bishop from that ranch. And he said, I know you need it today. Because I told my congregation I'd have the excuse because I was needed out to the Seven Ranch. He says, what is it you need? And he told him how bad she was and everything. He
called us all over, and now we're on the bed and had family prayers and ministered to her. And right away, we just started to improve immediately. Well, in the meantime, Alice had got real bad, and Will said she might as well be up there with Sadie. So he brought her and Devin and Thelma up there. And I remember that there was still so that they couldn't stand noises or anything like that. So I had to take Devin and Thelma, keep them away from the house so they wouldn't make any noise. So my job was to send those kids away from the house all the time. So they, and then after they got a little better, they were real sick when she first come, they were getting better. And they both lost every bit of their hair. And it turned out to be what we call is they used to call brain fever, typhoid fever. And I remember how I used to have to take those kids and go play with them all day and keep them out of the way. And then Sadie was in one room. She was in the living room. And I was just in the bedroom. And I remember they wanted to be near each other. So my dad, they couldn't walk. They had to learn to walk all over again. My father picked Alice up and carried her in her Sadie was. And they sit there and look at each other and laugh. And there was the week that they couldn't understand what the pet started to get well. And that's what happened to the feeling. Well, you know, Alice was getting well. She was doing better. Sadie was sicker than she was.
It makes me wonder if this wasn't the sickness that caused Mother to have a rheumatic heart. And then Aunt Sadie died when she's just 57.
Yeah, she sure
so
did.
It must have been injury to both her hearts.
She was only 47.
47.
41.
Yeah.
And with a bad heart.
So that sickness, and that would have been no penicillin or anything. And Mother always thought that was what caused her to have a rheumatic heart.
Yeah, and there was other benefits. It could be because they almost lost their arm bone. I'm very sure.
And I know about you telling the story of Grandpa Devin and the way he handled his children. This is quite an old story.
That was when Alice came up to the ranch and brought the kids from school. Came to visit. And when he, up there there was this squaw man, Putin Brown. He'd married a white woman, that's why he was called a squaw man. And he had he owned a lot of country around there. And he liked to have dances and parties at his home. And the cowboys and everybody around would come to his parties. But there was hardly any women or girls around at all the dance yet. Very few. Especially white girls. So he wanted to come down and have someone down to invite the Bevan girls to go up there to that dance. That'd be great. They'd have Alice and Peggy, and Peggy was a young girl. And so Alice said, sure, we'll go. And after they left, Grandpa just quietly informed me, he said, you're not going to that dance. She says, yes, I am going to that dance. I'm a married woman, and I'm old enough to do as I please, and I'm perfect fit. We'll take care of Peggy. By the way, you're not going. And the Queenie Brown had said that he'd send a team and a buggy down to get him. So just a while before they were due to come, he just simply got those two girls in the room and locked the door, put the key away, and when they come back, his daughters were not available. He said, no, my daughters are not going. And they went back up, and Alice was supposed to be tied, and she was so mad. Sure she'd never speak to her dad again. It just stormed around. Well, then the word came down the next morning about a stabbing they'd had. They'd had liquor up there, and they'd had a big trial and everything. And so the Bevan's daughters were safe.
And tell them what you told me about Will. Oh, he said Will left them here?
Yes. He says, Will left you in my charge, and while you're under my roof and in my charge, I'm taking care of you.
That's what
my husband would say, too, I think.
Grandma, my sister is here today, and I wanted to tell a little story she remembers about Canada.
Every morning, I'd wake up to hear the separator going. In a little building, wasn't it, over a little bridge? And they'd seem to lose this little part off the separator. And And I didn't know exactly where that part was, but I'd watch him hunt it. I'd sit back in a chair and watch him look and look and look. Finally, after they looked long enough, I told him where it was.
He was genius.
They came up there, they had lost and all that. Thank you.
1967, and Uncle Joe took us down and showed us the last house you lived in before you came to Utah. And it had a whole bunch of Chinese that were living in it then. Well, tell me a little bit about that house, and it's a real nice looking house.
That was the house that we lived in when we moved back to Aspen, the ranch. We bought that place and moved back there. And at that time, before we left the ranch, in fact, it started, my mother's gone through the change of life, and she'd have terrible headaches, and she'd faint. She just fainted dead away. As we got down in the house, we didn't dare leave her. Dad and I, one of us, stayed home to be with her. And I remember coming home from school when it was all so much snow. And Mother sitting out on the back porch and Dad there with her and trying to get her, putting snow on her head and trying to get her out of the faint. And then her...
Then I understand that when you left to come to Tula, then you, my mom and dad, moved in that house.
I think that's the fact. Yes, they did move in that house.
And that's where we were living by the time they left that country.
They moved away from that little house across the canal. But speaking about that particular thing that Devin told us about, you heard it, didn't you? About the accident, Uncle Ike stopped the...
Oh, yes.
Well, that's on the same artery, but when they were living across the canal, I remember that as plain as anything. I was over there, and of course, how a kid is, they got to be curious about everything. And Will had a few horses back into a wagon. And he said, I got to go to the hospital and talk to Alice. He said, no, just don't bother him. He let me sit on the seat with him. He said, just sit right still and don't bother the horses. I'll be out in a minute. But that wasn't any good. I thought, oh, that's great. I'll pick some reins up. And what he did, he shaked this rein and then shake that rein, and the horse said, go. And I said, giddy up. Took hold of the rein. And the horses started to go, and they went round in circles. Round that wagon went, and that horse in a circle, and tipped the wagon over. And Will come running out, and they scared to death. I didn't know how badly hurt I was. But it was just... escaped my eye, and I just now showed it to them, and the scar is still there and empty my eye. Because I just had to see what had happened, but they'd giddy up.
We're going to tell a little story about Grandma Anderson from Andorra's experience.
Not Grandma Anderson.
No, Grandma Brennan.
You meant Grandma Brennan. But there's only a couple of times in my life that I ever knew my father really.
When I was a child,
one of them was, but I remember him getting mad at me twice. Four times in his life, I think he got mad, and when he got mad, he wanted to stay out of his way. He just didn't want to get around us, he was so mild.
Take after your grandpa.
Yeah, he's so mild, but if he did get mad, that was it.
Grandpa
Devin. Yeah, she said, you think. But up in Canada, he had this, when he first went up the Ray Maggie's living was making post fences, making fences. And on the back of his wagon, he had a big hammer. And he'd go along and they'd have their holes dug. Those big, no, they'd have big holes. They'd have their posts laying along the ground with a sharpened point. And then he'd come along and they'd have him just sitting up a little bit. He'd come along and his big hammer would get down, hit it, and then he'd go to the next pole and hit it. And it was a big old hammer, and it was a dangerous thing. And so he said to me this time, he said, I'll be coming out in a minute, and you stay away from that hammer. But I had to look over to see what it felt like. So I went over to feel it, and when he come out, he caught me, and he hit me right good spanking. That's the only spanking. The only time he ever touched me. And then this other time, so amusing to me, was after I was a school teacher. I taught school for several years, and I was home on vacation. We had a Model T Ford. My mother scared to death of the car anyway. And we'd gone for a ride down to Erda, and we were on our way home. And before the railroad crossing below town,
down by that, what you call it, station down there? Right out the station.
Coming.
And all the other station. No, that station down here.
Warner?
Yeah, Warner Station. You see the smoke of it. And it was coming along, and she said, tell there's a car, or a train, there's a train still. And he just went along, just paid attention to it. When he got up, quite a bit closer, was still a long ways off, but when he got up, quite a bit closer to the crossing, mother reached over, turned off the key. And he was so mad, and at her, he never got mad at her, but he was mad at her. And he just went, and I opened my mouth to him, and said, oh, Dad. And he said, you shut up. And I did. Believe me, I did. Mother just sat and smiled, and it was all right. He never got mad at her. If we ever asked our dad if we could do anything, he'd always said, ask your mother. Could we go any place? Well,
I remember her cutting grass on there.
Yeah, I was there.
They, according to that door, they really got along well, and they fought the world with each other.
Yeah, Grandpa would. We'd say, well, good soap show tonight. I'd say, hey, it's a good soap night, but almost soap. Her mother, I'd call her mom, I'll call her mother and dad. Okay, she says, well, I guess we'll go. Well, we'll just tell dad that we're going. So he'd come home and he'd say, well, we're going to show tonight. He says, oh, are we? And he'd say, yeah, we're going. So he'd say, be sure. We'd go to the show.
Come home.
And when he come home, Mother was always so quick to jump to conclusions.